It's me, Dan, from Harmontown. You can hear episodes of our show and 30 others before anyone else on TuneIn First Play. The TuneIn app is a free mobile audio app available across iOS, Android, and Windows. Podcast superfans get even more from their favorite shows. For 4 weeks, new episodes of Harmontown will be available a full 24 hours early, exclusively on TuneIn. Podcasts will release their new episodes early, including feral audio shows like Drinky Fun Time, Dome People Town, and Now. TuneIn is also full of content like live sports, news, music, and audiobooks. Get the next episode of Harmontown right now at the TuneIn app at tunein.com/Harmontown.
Feral Audio.
Twisting the Wind with Johnny Pemberton, also known as the Executive Buffet, also known as Hands on the Branch. I'm currently leaning forward right now, sort of a post-haste stress position that you would use on maybe a tally or some sort of an insurgent-type person. Clearly, I'm not stressed. Clearly, this is a relaxed position for me because I've just come down off an 11,500-foot ridge, which was crested not effortlessly, but with no negative effort expended, just sort of like a real positive vibration, a sort of shockwave as the airplane moves through that bow wave or bow wave that is the sound barrier out at the beach in San Diego where the people are watching as this F-14 shows off. It just blasts through and it creates this reverberation shockwave that sends the people straight to their beers and straight to their cheers. And that's what I feel like I'm at right now, even though I'm in this self-imposed stress position. So all that being said, I want to thank you for coming back to the podcast here. But you want to make sure you check out Pickle and Peanut, the TV show that I do a voice for on the Disney XD network. It's a great show. If you like Ren and Stimpy, then you'll love it. I know it because I did, and I do, and I did, and I still do. So please check it out. It premieres on September 7th on Disney XD. Watch it. I mean, you know me. I don't promote stuff unless I genuinely think it's a great thing to do, because there's been a lot of things I've been a part of, and I don't really talk about them because it's like, well, it's either here nor there. It's either here nor care. It's either bear nor share. It's either stare nor bear. Care Bears, yeah. But this is something different. I'm really proud of this, and I think it's incredibly funny and psychedelic and subversive, even though it is meant for, quote, children, unquote. It is not for children. I can't believe they're even able to make this, actually. So there's stuff in there that blows my dick off. So please watch that. Premieres September 7th, 9 p.m. on Disney XD. Otherwise, please continue to check in at the podcast. Please rate and review. Please subscribe. Please tell your goddamn friends. If you don't have any friends, make some friends and get them into this specialty product. Right now you're in an audio deli, okay? And I'm serving up some very thin or thick. I can dial in my slicer to your needs, to convex Brinkman 649, and it can do any sort of slicing you desire. I'll do that for you. And we'll ship it off to David's house, and it's going to come to a direct input audio deposit that you're just going to freak out about when you get it. And that's what we're doing here. This is an audio deli. So that being said, please check the website, johnnypemberton.com, and see my stand-up comedy dates. There's lots of them available. Most of them are in Los Angeles or the areas around there. Look out for possible tour styles happening in the Tennessee, Kentucky, Toronto, Ohio, Detroit areas in December. And before that is going to happen, I'll be with a person named Duncan Trussell in Australia and a bit of touch of New Zealand in early first part of November, okay? So go see that. Check it out. Definitely get down in there. It's going to be real good. Just pull it up and drop it off and let it go in. Just pull on right up there, okay? And otherwise, please enjoy this podcast. It's mainly the live recording, live to tape with Duncan Trussell. I just mentioned his name. He's actually going to be here right now. Not here. He's not here right now with me. I'm just this is the pre-intro telling you about how you should rate and review, subscribe, and also fucking donate. And buy shit through our Amazon portal. That's a real thing, okay? You just click on that. You go to Twisting the Wind, the website page through the Feral Audio website. It's a subsidiary of Feral Audio, Twisting the Wind is. And then you click on Shop on Amazon. You buy the things you want and some of the things you need, and we get a little piece of that, and that really helps out. Well, you gotta do it. You gotta do it. You gotta do it.
Because if Tommy takes responsibility to be the godfather, I know how he is, and he'll take the responsibility serious. So if something happens to me, I know my baby will be taken care of. I won't have to worry about it. I know my baby will be taken care of.
Do 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 do.
Hey guys,
how you sound there, honey?
I sound good.
Let's see. I'm gonna just tweak you out. Make sure you're hot and ready.
Hot and ready to go. Show me the way to Cinnamon Road.
Hot and ready to go. Show me the way to Cinnamon Road.
His treasure trail's 5 miles long as he is wide. Paul Bunyan's got a treasure trail that leads to a long.
Show me the way to Cinnamon Road. I got a baby, I got a boy.
It is
a little hot tub tucky, and your name is McVoy. What's up?
As one of the interesting and one of my favorite, yet somehow least explored aspects of Appalachian mythology and culture is... there's so many wonderful stories about Paul Bunyan, but interestingly enough, phallus is overlooked in every single one of these stories.
And it's got to be just, I mean, it's gigantic. It's a Paul Bunyan dick.
It is something that, again and again, now in Warren Wilson College, where I went to school, I actually Warren Wilson College.
Warren Wilson.
In Swannanoa, North Carolina, I received a doctorate in Paul Bunyan studies. Oh. And this is the least explored and also the most controversial aspect of the mythology, to the point where some Paul Bunyan scholars...
Is there a name for a Paul Bunyan scholar, like a Bunyanist or a...
A Bunyographer.
A Bunyographer, okay.
But up until this point, the guys who are really getting deep into the...
The Bunyography.
Specifically is the phallus of Paul Bunyan... they've been disappearing lately, which
is serious.
Anytime anybody comes out and starts telling the untold stories,
right?
And there's about 15
untold stories
that are all based around his penis,
his foul,
and shaft,
right?
And balls.
Well, because when it's that big, you have to differentiate between the different zones of it. Because if you're talking about just the penis, you're throwing out the baby with the bathwater, so to speak.
You're not going to cover the entire penis if you just call it a penis. You've got to go into the...
It's like talking about the earth as one climate, you know, or
right,
as always, if there's canyons and valleys and mountains and streams, and such is the topography of the penis.
You don't say it's the earth. When you're mentioning the earth, you say the ball with the many canyons and streams and valleys.
Well, you do, but that's kind of reductive. You know, you want to talk about that the whole thing.
Depending on what you're talking about.
Well, see, I subscribe to a different theory of bunionology in terms of the phallus, where it has to do with microclimates.
Bunyography. It's okay, man.
Sorry.
You didn't. I went to school for it, and it is.
I just studied on my own. I'm a self-taught.
People are going to do bun. People call it bunyology. It's a starter term for it, but it's bunyography technically. of the eastern mountainous region of the United States.
See, the thing about me is I thought that Paul Bunyan was from Minnesota. Because he is.
That's hilarious. Yeah, I used to too, man. That was one of the, that's when I, so my first Bunyan class.
Is that the great myth number one?
That's actually myth number three.
Really?
Yeah. The great myth number one is that Paul Bunyan was human.
Oh.
Yeah, that's great.
He's a Titan, right?
Well, technically he is of the Titan class.
Right.
But he's actually a chameleon dinosaur descendant.
I thought it was a Scorchmaster.
Well, the name of the, so, okay, right. Now you're there.
He's a Scorchmaster.
He's a descendant of the Scorchmaster, right, which was one of the dinosaurs that unfortunately died in that quicksand die-off that happened when the quantum or the magnetic poles shifted, mm-hmm, and the entire troposphere of the ball with the canyons and valleys and streams liquefied. And we lost the Scorchmasters, which isn't a bad thing.
Well, yeah, because as I know, those Scorchmasters, they're terrible. They're
poisonous arrogant. Fire. So yeah, that's what's interesting. The so their fire was poisonous. Like these days, we don't even have I guess the closest you have is radiation, or is poisonous fire. But yeah, they had a just basic. Their fire was poisonous. You got burnt by that stuff, and you're gonna get. It's gonna break out.
It's gonna liquefy your dick.
Yeah, partially.
These Scorchmasters. Now, when we're talking about these Scorchmasters, are we? This is the first epoch.
This is the third epoch of the fourth trimillennium.
You say epoch?
It's epoch.
See, I always say epic or epoch.
Trivia: Tupac Shakur is named after the epoch.
Oh, really? He's supposed to be. I get it. Tupac, like the second epoch.
Yeah.
The second epoch. Tupac.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah, it's really interesting. A lot of people are not aware of the fact that he was a scholar of the Great Shift.
Who, Tupac Shakur?
Yeah.
That's his real name.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what no one knows, is he fought his entire life to have Spoonerisms legitimized.
Thank God. Somebody's got to do it. And they're vanishing too. You know, this is the thing, guys. Look into it. Operation Jade Helm, September 11th. You're not going to find a lot of like science. Right now, there are a lot of scientists, bacteriologists, immunologists, chiropractors,
epochologists,
and bunyographers who are vanishing. Like 16 a day.
Yeah. 16 a day. Shit, dogs in a dynamite field. That's what I call that.
Know a better term for it.
NOAA weather radar, because the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration has always been so above board that that brings me back around to talking about your workout schedule. Duncan Trussell, welcome to Twisting the Wind.
Thank you.
I have Duncan Trussell on the podcast.
Good day to you, friends. Salute to your parents.
Salute to your house. Salute to your life.
I salute your house and I salute your lineage. I salute your ancestors and I salute their ancestors all the way back to that sweet burst of blast we call that big old bang.
That little monkey baby. I also salute your house.
Monkey
I salute your,
baby.
I salute your shoes. I salute your...
monkey baby.
Monkey baby. Monkey baby, I wanna suck your drool.
Do you know that that awesome old kid's lullaby, little monkey baby bouncing on the raft?
I kind of have an inkling of it, but maybe you could remind us all.
Well, this is in old Irish folklore that children thought that if you said this five times in a row in front of a mirror darkened with
the
blood
Irish.
Of your uncle... that you would, a monkey baby would appear and bring you a chunk of gold in exchange for one of your pets.
Or a catalog.
Gold catalog.
Right. That was the whole thing.
Where you could order gold from.
Or just, you can indulge in the idea of it happening for you one day.
But do you want to hear how the poem goes?
Love to hear it.
There's a little monkey baby a bouncing on the raft. A little monkey baby. He looks like a giraffe. His lips are made of iron. His eyes are made of steel. His heart is made of blackened blood that monkey cannot feel. It lives beneath the earth where the fire and flames do flicker. And if you climb down there, that monkey, you'll hear him snicker. He laughs at all the souls ignited by the fire. He loves to hear them burning there upon the funeral pyre. There's nothing that makes the monkey happier than the sounds of bones a-crunchin'. That's why when monkey baby comes, you ought to go a-runnin'.
Oh, I love it. That's such a great one. That first verse is great. I think hearing that reminds me of the second verse of the monkey baby, the Irish one. Follow down the stairs and you will be
follow down the stairs and you will be bespoken.
No, it's besmirched. No, besmirched, this is it.
Right.
Lurch, birch, stand back, besmirch. I have a candle. I have a torch. You are the one within this drum. I stand, I smack, I clip, I run. I intoneth, intone thy name in spoke in Spanish and spoke in Spain. The grains, they go against my aisles. The house that falls inside the mouse. The chirp, the chatter, the clunk, the clatter, the splash, the spunk, the run, the rather. You come inside and wish you had. And for fun flunt, you stunk the bind.
Bad.
The bane stains the ways from against the cocktail trays. Mm. You've come back inside it, and the monkey baby
stays.
Bathes.
Yeah.
It's all that Gaelic stuff. It's so hard to say that.
It's so hard to say it in the actual dialect. It's very hard to say.
Oh, to hear that. Spoken at a high mass.
Or at a plague funeral.
Oh, I love a good plague funeral.
I don't. And when the bagpipes set in and they bring out those trays of liver.
We want to sing that together? The plague, one of the plague mass.
We'll never drink again. We'll never hear the chirping of the wren, nor will he walk upon the fields so green. He's gone to that place in between.
He's living in between the worlds. He can go to surface. He's living in between the worlds. He's trying to come and hurt us. He's a magic devil man with spikes on his hands. His thumbs stick straight up and they'll pierce through the lands. He'll take all your plans. He'll take all your mothers.
Yes.
He'll take all the daughters and he'll steal all the brothers.
Mm.
He'll make sweet love in the secondary anus.
Yes.
He'll plug it so deep that you can rearrange it. Oh, try to drain it out. The man, he goes asunder. He's subterranean. Jimmy Job is coming for the plunder. He'll steal everything you have and take it all under. Oh, you dry off the baby and lick him for the thunder.
God, every time I hear that, I tear up.
It's just such like a, it's just something where it's like, it's so raw.
Oh, it's the watering of the graves,
because the Spike Man, he's someone who just, you know, to be living in that time period when you're every day you're thinking about, you don't know that it's not true.
I would imagine a small percentage of your listeners probably don't know this, who the Spike Man is.
No,
so in Celtic, Orthodox,
Gaelic as well,
and Gaelic mythology.
Mm-hmm.
The Spike Man. So back in these days, and because of a. Either because of a, no one's really quite sure what it was, but more than likely it was because of the peat bogs and the a specific fungus that was growing there.
Very powerful.
When a person would die, their body would be placed in a classic coffin. But because of this fungus, it was quite common to go walking among the graves. And if you walked in the rain, and they call this watering
Which
the graves.
It's kind of hard to not walk in the rain.
Out there.
Yeah.
Because it's always wet.
That
was called watering the graves.
Right.
So that was called, you know, the tears of water in the graves of my lady. And this apparently interacted with a fungus that had gotten into these the corpses, and they'd start a rattling.
Yep. It's called a thorkin.
A thorkin.
A thorkin snatch.
And that's the sound. That is the sound of the rattle of the corpse upon the tide. And and so they would dig into that thing. Uh-huh. Anyway, the spike man is the guy whose job it was. When one of these coffins would go a thorkin, you'd have to dig in again.
And dig that secondary anus.
And get into that thing, and then you'd have to put a spike in it.
Right.
And that would stop the rattling.
And the spike had to go right above the anus and the sacral vertebra.
That's right.
To that somehow, because I think what scientists have figured out since, and this is all cryptozoology and no one will acknowledge it, but they say that this fungus, the thorkin fungus, what it did, because, you know, as we know, mycelia, fungal mycelia is basically a mimic of the human brain neural network.
Yes.
What it did is it would dig into those graves, and it would go through the body, and it would attach to the spinal cord, and it's basically reanimating the body for purposes of proliferating its own fungal spores.
It shakes the spores off.
That's what a zombie is. It's just a fungal infected human.
That's what Sam Harris says.
Right. Oh, really?
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah, because that would make sense. Yeah, it totally makes sense. I mean, that's what we are, right? We're just fungus, essentially just fungus to some extent.
We're 80% fungus and 10% stone.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think we're also 10% is gravy.
No, I think it's 5% gravy, 2% anthracite, and 8% hominid.
I'm going to respectfully disagree with you there.
Well, you know what?
I think it's 10% gravy.
You go home tonight. You hold a magnet up to your heart.
You go home tonight.
No, you go home tonight.
I didn't know this was going to be this kind of interview.
No,
so
you go home.
What are you doing, an attack interview now?
What is this? Okay, what am I? Ann Coulter?
Yeah, you sound like Ann Coulter right now. You go
it's
home
Ann
tonight.
Coulter.
Well,
Ann Coulter.
You just told me to go home.
When you go home tonight and you put the magnet up to your skin, does it stick or not?
It does not stick.
You're lying.
It does not stick to my skin.
No person in 1,000 years has not.
All right, man.
You tell me when you do your home magnet therapy at night, it's different.
You're gonna fucking do this on a live podcast,
Duncan. It's mandated. Magnet therapy has been mandated by the government.
Goddamn, ever have a magnet stick to me, man? I went to the Reagan Challenge when I was in gym class in the third grade, and every kid should be able to hold a magnet to his skin, and it should stay there. And I was the only kid in gym class. The magnet would fall off. Everybody laughed. Everyone made fun of me. I had to do push-ups, and the idea I never stuck, man.
Duncan, I'm sorry. I didn't realize.
I'm sorry.
Why don't we
make fun of my other disabilities?
Hey, I'm sorry for bringing it up. I honestly didn't know. I thought you were trying to be controversial by saying you didn't. I guess that's the thing that people
don't magnet shame me, man.
You know what? I'm not magnet shaming
it's
you.
So fucked.
It's my own myopic prejudice that it's brought
me
here.
It really is.
Yeah,
man.
It is.
It's like at least 6% of the population, when you put a magnet against them, it falls to the ground.
It's actually more like 0.2, but
okay, that's a very fucking very arguable statistic, by the way, and that number changes every day.
I believe the old saying is the.
All right, here we go.
Ephesians chapter 6, verse 12.
Oh, come on.
The man who strikes inside the circle of his own hoop is the one who finds the circle broken.
Oh, God. Every magnet shamer says that. Mm-hmm. It's such shit.
Well, you know, it's not such shit. It's such truth, okay? Samuel chapter 2, verse 6. The life inside the man of the fungus is a thorkin blasted forth from under the skin of the man who stands back within it. We are all.
You're a fucking dick.
Jesus wept. Did Jesus weep? You know, some people say that Jesus wept. Those are false tears. You know about this? Because he knew he was going to raise up Lazarus.
Wait,
so he was creating a show.
Can we hold on? Let me just hold the fucking jibber jabber on this bullshit yap fest we're having here. Can I say something really quick?
Go ahead.
Here's what I realized last night.
Flap those babies.
Last night, this is what I realized. And I said it to Cora. She was falling asleep, and I think I woke her up to tell her this because I realized
right,
this.
Right, right, right.
Jesus never got old. Jesus never had to bury his mother. Jesus never had to take care of his parents getting old.
He didn't.
Jesus never had to. So I was thinking, the crucifixion is supposed to be this brutal thing that happened to Jesus.
But it was pretty quick.
What's more brutal? Getting old.
Yeah.
So then you realize that son of a bitch ducked out of the fucking casino before he really had to experience what it is to be a human being. And everybody's like, oh, he's the thing with no sin. Okay, hold on.
Right.
He never had to goddamn take care of his fucking... He never had to change his mom's diapers. Or
deal with her, like, forgetting things. Yeah. Or just, like, annoying him.
How come
constantly?
No one talks about that? Like, he... So it's like, okay... So yeah. The entire world,
so he's 35.
It consists of all these people with locked-in syndrome, Crohn's disease, late-stage lymphomas,
Alzheimer's.
All these slow degenerative diseases.
Lou Gehrig's.
And it's MS. Like, if you sit down with someone who's got like MS,
yeah,
or if you sat down with somebody who's got like, I don't know about MS, because I think that those people.
Lupus.
Or someone who's just got some chronic, let's say, cluster headaches, or you know, something like the suicide headaches, or yeah. You sit down with somebody like that who's like,
it's tedious,
5 inches from taking a gun and blowing their brains out, and you say, listen, would you prefer to be crucified? Because we could do that,
right?
I think a fair amount of them might be like, you know what, just fucking crucify me, I'll take that over the cluster headaches. So when you consider the fact,
right,
that Jesus dies,
mm-hmm,
never having to have a shitty kid.
Uh-huh.
No crappy, oily teenage son who's like, shut the fuck up, dad. Would you stop healing people?
Never had to deal with joint pain.
Never had
insomnia.
Insomnia. Never had to deal with like a regretful business deal.
Never had to
call Time Warner. Never had to fucking,
ED.
See the inevitable goddamn Instagram photo of an ex-girlfriend on a hike in Griffith Park with
a drummer. That's on you. That's on you. Jesus would say that's on you, baby.
Anyway, my point is this.
He who seeks the occasion of sin shall drink from the barrel it was fermented in.
I guarantee he would have said baby all the time, too. But yeah, you know what I mean? When you realize that Jesus really did kind of get to slip out of the theater. Or in the middle of the show.
Yeah.
And the price he paid was a flogging and a crucifixion. And up until that point, he got to wander around with his pals. And everyone's like, holy shit, you're amazing. That guy had a pretty good life. So
good.
I think it's – I want the fucking Messiah to be? I want the Messiah to be somebody in their mid-60s who was found 6 days after their death by their downstairs neighbor, and they couldn't remember their name. That's a suffering person. What about that person? Those are the real messiahs, if you ask me.
So you're just giving up on Jesus now because of this?
It was really, I had a dark night of the soul last night. Because
really?
Because as I was laying...
Oh, but this is also, you said you had extreme paranoia night as well.
Yes.
So this maybe have been a part of it.
This is part of me stopping marijuana for 2 weeks. But as I'm laying there, and then I realized, because I've always loved Jesus, and I've always had this like great feeling of love for Jesus, and I've always thought, oh, what he went through. And then I'm like, wait, man.
Yeah.
He never had to deal with male pattern baldness. He never had to deal with like...
He kind of is balding a lot of pictures, though. You know, he is depicted as having a bit of a receding hairline often.
Well, I mean, it's up in the air, but oh, that's an interesting thing. Well, oh, really? So you can heal leprosy, but you can't make your hair grow back?
Well, I would say that, I mean, I'm going to play Jesus' advocate here and just say that, I think Jesus, what Jesus was interested in, he wasn't concerned with that. I think he was willing to be whatever people saw him as. He's like the color red if you're colorblind.
I went to Jesus.
You went to him?
If he was around today.
Yeah.
Did he only, was there like a certain number of diseases that he would cure and then some he wouldn't?
Well, you know, I think, I don't know. I kind of have a different opinion of Jesus now after reading that Reza
like
Aslan
gas.
Book. Gas?
I'm not talking about Reza Aslan's fucking historic Jesus. I'm talking mythological Jesus. Of course, there's no real fucking guy who's like, I'm saying the mythological Jesus.
Right, the mythological
Reza
Jesus.
Reza Aslan's Jesus is whatever. Who
it's
cares?
Great.
It's just another approach.
Did you read it?
Of course I read it. And I got
it. It was good.
I thought it was great. And then I got annoyed because
why?
I realized, oh, this is just another goddamn missing the point where it's like, let's find the factual historic.
But
Jesus.
He wasn't, though. That's not what he was. Well,
yeah, he was.
I don't think he was. He
was,
wasn't.
Yes.
You think he's trying to take it down and to make it seem
I don't think he was trying to do anything like that. I think he was just doing that. Okay. So there's a very, it's a genre.
Right.
And the genre is the historic Jesus.
Right.
And that's a bookseller.
Right.
It sells books.
Because it's controversial. It's we're looking at him in a way that it hasn't been looked at before, but due to new evidence or a compilation of said such evidence.
You want to hear a crazy story because the car horn's beeping and people can hear it? You know what? Okay. I want to tell you this crazy.
You know what? Go ahead.
So once, a very long time ago, we were shooting this sketch with the grandson
of Jesus,
of the founder of the Church of Satan.
Okay.
And this guy is a Satanist, and we were using him in the sketch. Very, very nice guy.
Right.
And but in the midst of, in this sketch, we were invoking
some powerful stuff.
The demon, I can't remember which. We were invoking some demonic force.
Right.
And in the middle of doing it, right as we were doing it, the power went out in the building and a car horn started beeping out there.
Jesus Christ.
It was so spooky.
That's terrible.
Ooh, it gave us the heebie-jeebies.
So you're trying to say that maybe that it's real.
I'm saying that we just reached enough maximum blasphemy that it caused a car horn to go
off. Just now, yeah. Jesus is like, hey guys, watch it. I like that book, but I don't like it that much.
No, I think the historic Jesus genre is not only redundant, but, and I was into that Reza Aslan book, and I did talk about how cool it was.
Right.
And I like his writing style, and I particularly like his description of what Judaism looked like back then.
Well, to me, that was all new stuff. I don't know that much. I don't
I
know nearly
know
as much.
Either.
But you know a lot more about the Bible than I do. But
I know. I took a class in the New Testament, and I got a minor in religious studies at my college. So I
just used to fuck off in the back of church at Catholic school, so that's different.
I had a great teacher who was really good at teaching the Gospels and a very non-denominational, very non-biased, non-ethical, non-moral way, just explaining like, you know, here's what it is, here's the language it's written in, here's how many there are, and here's why that there's certain things in some of them and certain
stories.
And
why they say things the way they say them.
Fascinating. Yeah. It's fascinating. And I loved it. And I love the way that she like humanized it. It was fucking cool. There's no but.
There's a but, though. But I want to hear the but.
I'm just saying, like, so the historic Jesus genre doesn't interest me because I'm interested in the mythological Jesus.
Right.
I'm interested in the archetypical Jesus. I'm interested in the Jesus of legend, not the Jesus of whether the whole thing where, like, there was a Jesus. Who fucking cares? I'm not talking. That means nothing to me.
Right.
I don't care.
So
it doesn't matter.
I mean, in a way, it's like the Jesus that exists, the mythological Jesus is essentially the Jesus that was created by the gospel, not really the Jesus, not really the historical Jesus. Because that's what Aslan talks about, why it's such a successful religion, is because it allowed people to make the religion in their own image, because Jesus was like this sort of he's like a, not an everyman, but it's sort of this sort of template with which you could apply to your own culture because of the way, because of him being like man and him being of both God. So that's what he attributes to the success of Christianity, a big part of that.
But it's like the
so that's the interpretation
organized
of the mythologized
construction of a religion, the concept of that. The group of people sat around and put this story together, to me, is, I think, a little optimistic that it works like that. I don't think it works. I don't think we know how it works. I think it's...
No. But that's the mystery, right?
You have all these tributaries rolling into this myth, and the tributaries, all these rivers rolling in from Egyptian mythology, from Gnostic, you have all these interesting inlets that form this mythological character. There really is just a file cabinet filled with the most cutting edge sociological information at the time.
Right.
And so that is badass.
That's the fuel.
So in the story itself, because it's been told so many times, mm-hmm. just based on what we understand from epigenetics, this is a thing that is, this story has become, or if you, has become encoded.
In, right. In
the,
exactly.
In the DNA.
The repetition of it, yes, makes it real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the story lives inside, possibly, maybe, possibly, if phobias get passed down from at least, right, two generations, as we're beginning to discover now, then myths get passed down, right, in the same way. And if that's the case, then there really is a living conduit that points in the direction of these symbol structures that represent how to optimize your life in a way that's going to make you
the happiest,
a healer.
Right. To have the kingdom of heaven on earth.
Yeah.
That's what always gets me about, I feel like there's like been a resurgence, or not a resurgence, maybe just like a more, it's more popular to be an atheist and to be a doomer. Mm. Like it's everywhere now. I feel like I was ahead of the trend to some extent a couple years ago.
What, now, being a doomer atheist?
Yeah, not being so much an atheist, but a doomer. There's always people now who are writing stuff about that, about just the doom at hand because of all the, because they're waking up to see all the different aspects of like globalism and how it's changed things, but it's such a narrow mindset.
The rapidly accelerating ice cap melt. I think what it is, and I would love to. Sometimes I theorize that the obsession with the apocalypse,
right,
eschatology, is a direct result of being unable to digest the fact that you're going to die.
Yeah.
Because the reality is ice cap melting, ice cap not melting, mm-hmm, UFO comes down full of a forgiving, super advanced alien race, gazes down upon the planet and shoots a beam of healing on the planet.
That makes time dissolves.
Everything grows, yeah, back.
Right.
All the forests grow back. The ice caps are back. The shit, you know what I was thinking?
I think it'll just unzip everything. It'll unzip time. Time will become a just a direction.
I was thinking the other day, right, how if an alien shrank us down, everything, every human on the planet and, yeah, every living organism on the planet, shrunk us down by 50%.
Oh, it would change everything.
We'd have so much more room.
I used to have a joke about that, the opposite. How cool would it be if spiders, all the spiders in the world, were just twice as big? How fucking cool that would be. It's like a spider the size of a soccer ball rolling through, like, boom. Like a Corvette of spiders just, yeah, rolling through your fucking neighborhood. Like, yeah. Oh shit. we'd be done for.
And you could finally hear what they sound like what noises, yeah, they make, if there are any noises,
oh,
they make.
Oh, God, it'd be so badass.
Like their chirp or their like shrill.
Like, oh, God, that's the big one. That's the basketball size one. Or it's like some sort of infrasound where you just feel it. It's like, or it sounds like a Hammond organ.
It's like the fucking Mist. Remember that movie,
yeah,
The Mist?
I love that.
Yeah, but the point is, if we fix all the ecological problems,
right,
outside of the ecological problem of our own aging process, then you're still going to have to deal with the fact that the world's going to end. Like, right, every single person has to come to terms with the fact that they are living at the end of days.
Life is a problem.
The subjective end of days has come for all human beings.
Well, it's because it's this thing where humans are, like, people worry about, Iran getting a nuclear weapon, right? Or they worry about space wars. They worry about all this stuff. But humans are, everything happens because of humans. We're selfish. We're programmed to procreate and keep going. Everything we do that's good or bad, it's all in the name of continuing the gene, because the gene's so fucking hungry. And what's it, what they call it, a selfish gene or something to that effect. And the fact that all that nuclear proliferation didn't happen, like the Earth wasn't destroyed in the 60s when it could have, I think is testament to the fact that as terrible as people are, they still are extremely selfish to the point where they will find a way to persist in the face of,
yes,
stuff that could destroy them. Because even though it's possible for the Earth to be destroyed by nuclear weapons, it hasn't, even though it could have happened for going on for 40 years now, but it hasn't, because people, the gene knows that will fucking, it'll wipe us out. So it won't allow it.
Yeah.
It just won't happen.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's some wishful thinking, but
I don't think it's wishful thinking. I think it's like a thing where it's just something will, something will, it'll persist no matter what.
There, no,
you know,
the history of the planet is one of extinction,
right? But it's not so much of extinction, but of change, like massive change.
But many extinctions,
right?
And it's happening. Many die offs. Many.
I just don't think we're gonna go. I don't think we're gonna be
humans.
Yeah, I don't think we're gonna become extinct.
I think I'm gonna become extinct, and you're gonna become extinct.
Yeah, we will. Hopefully, in the same day.
I can guarantee that.
That'd be cool,
brother.
Man.
But the whole, it's fun to, it's a really fun thing to imagine this idea that the sum total of all organic life on the planet,
right,
is an eternal being.
Oh, it is.
An immortal being. And the immortal being has all these varying segments and forms that are composed of all the different species and subspecies. And so this is an immortal being that is constantly, changing, transforming, molting, growing, new appendages,
vibrating,
and becoming more apt at manipulating its environment in very specific ways. So when you look at that you and I and every human being and every living thing and every organism on this planet and every tree and every plant is actually all part of this eternal, not eternal, but you could say a very old being that is constantly.
Maybe it is eternal, you know, because it goes back to that thing you're talking about, the quantum idea of it. It's like, at what point, where do you discern, like when does something start, when does something end? You can't really draw a line at some point, you know?
Well, I mean, the problem is we don't... to say it's eternal would be to say that I know how this planet gave birth to life.
Right.
And we don't know that.
But I mean, like, in terms of what is life?
Well, in this case, I think I'm differentiating inorganic matter.
Well, that's what I keep thinking about, because people talk about the domination of AI and how we'll be wiped out by advanced robots, computers, and things that we've created. But I feel like, to some extent, robots are just a different form of life, right? They're like, what's to say they're not alive?
We're robots.
Yeah, we're computers. We're just computers. We have nanobots. I ate a fucking bucket of nanobots today. I ate some yogurt.
Yeah, nanobots.
I just ate 3 billion nanobots.
Exactly. Yeah, we're just another technology.
Yeah, just a different type of technology.
Yeah, and we're a technology that gets created out of the forge of infinity.
Right.
Quintillions of years. Have you ever read that incredible weird poem, I Sing the Body Electric? Have you ever heard of that?
Oh, I think I've heard that.
Hold on, let me just find
it. It sounds like a Bruce Hack song.
No, it goes like this. Hold on. It goes, listen, let me just find this for you. It's really fucking cool.
I think
cool.
He wrote a song about
that. Let me find this. Look, listen. I'll just read this one. It's, you know, I don't understand exactly what it means, but it's by Walt Whitman. And, you know,
he did a good job.
He did a great job.
He was probably an alien.
Do you think he was an alien?
I think Mark Twain was definitely an alien. I honestly do. I think he was some sort of an alien life form.
Time traveler?
Not a time traveler so much as like this being that was sort of shot down from maybe time travel, maybe some sort of a time missile that we sent ourselves to teach us, sort of like a teaching, like a cone of sorts. Like he comes here for a little while, he lives and he changes everything, and after he's gone,
an like avatar,
something, yeah, some sort of force that
Vishnu,
whatever the opposite of a vector is, instead of going through and leaving nothing and adding. Taking and only not leaving anything. He's the opposite. He just left everything, and then he goes.
Check this out. Gentlemen, look at this wonder. Whatever the bids of the bidders, they cannot be high enough for it. For it, the globe lay preparing quintillions of years without one animal or plant. For it, the revolving cycles truly and steadily roll. It's talking about human beings,
right?
But it's just this incredible, you know. I don't know. What you're talking about, Mark Twain, is cool,
right?
But this is something Crowley talks about, which he points out. It's not. I'm sure he's not the only one who pointed this out. But he points out that of all the species, humans are the only one that creates these super examples of itself.
Right.
As far as we're aware. So you get these super examples of a human, right. And that's the Muhammads, the Jesuses, the Mark Twains.
Yeah.
Generally, it's considered to be the people who are the founders of the great world religions who create these shockwaves,
like
these sociological shockwaves that go moving out into whatever the particular cultural paradigm is over a certain amount of years,
right.
And completely shifts and warps the way that the human behaves.
Right.
It's interesting, the super animal. And yeah. That's a really fascinating
thing. It is. Yeah, but I mean, that is a thing that makes humans unique. But I keep thinking about this thing. I feel like I keep having these nanobot epiphanies. Like I'll go running and I'll be like listening to Philip Glass or something and thinking about just sort of like the scale of things, or just sort of the idea that so much of, like, people who are vegans, right? A lot of people who are vegans because they feel like they don't want to eat something with a face, or eat something that has,
right.
They don't want to eat something that's like them.
Right.
And there's so many things in humankind and what we talk about and think about that are, if you break it down, it's inherently selfish. It's a thing where it's like even thinking there's going to be an apocalypse is selfish, because it presupposes that you will be alive at the most important time in history, that you, it's going to happen for you. It's going to be the worst for you. Like, and so there's that.
So you don't, you know, it's for some weird reason.
Yeah.
There's something more comforting if we all die together.
Right, because it's out of your control. It's like, I couldn't do anything about it. It was just this big event, and I was just part of this this way. I got swept up in the wave of time.
And it's like, here the reality is, we all die.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone dies. That every single human will die. It's the price for being on this planet is death. So it's like there is an apocalypse. It's just not timed out,
right.
In the way people would like it timed out. It's an apocalypse that's more like a relay race than it is everyone crossing the finish line at once.
Yeah, it's definitely a relay race.
Yeah.
But it's that selfishness. It's like
a bridge of skulls, brother, that we walk into the future on, and the skulls are our ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
That's Teilhard de Chardin. It's all species walk into the future on a bridge made of the bones of their dead. And uh-huh. That's true.
It is. Yeah. Like the people get up in arms about, this was you're built on a burial site? Like, everything is a burial site.
Yeah.
There's not a single non-burial site. It doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Show me a place that hasn't been a burial site for something, or at least for something that's been deemed important. Like that's what always gets me, is the things that have been deemed, certain things get deemed important and special because of, for no real reason, all because of the selfishness or the myopic, because you're thinking about how similar this is to your own understanding of the world. Where like a, I mean, I keep going back to the thing about robots, because I keep thinking about, like, I feel like I've had an epiphany recently thinking about how, like, when robots, we'll probably live to see robots and AI be so lifelike that it's stunning.
They will pass the Turing test by 2025.
And when that happens, there's going to be a lot of people who hate these things, but you have to be respectful to something just because
you ain't going to be able to hate it.
I won't be able to hate it. I'll probably love it.
No, but I don't think. I think that see, the problem is, like, one of the qualities of intelligence. It's really fun to think about superintelligence.
Yeah.
But the way you think about superintelligence is by thinking of the way the majority of socially intelligent people function. Like, think about somebody you know who is very successful, and the way that they function is through. In society,
right.
And I've noticed that people are quite successful, when I get around them, they give me the feeling that they're my best friend.
Right.
They give me the feeling.
It's called the Hugh Jackman effect.
The Hugh Jackman. You get around them and they're so profoundly interested in what you have to say, even though you've just met them. They give you the feeling that they're
listening. It's respect. It's pure. It's like a very
pure respect, but right. They're listening to you in a way as though you're someone who might change their life in that moment.
Right.
They're not bullshitting you either.
Yeah.
They've just managed to just genuinely look at everything that comes into their direct experience as a messenger from God or something. They love you. They think you're amazing. They're not even doing it as a manipulation, because if they were doing it as a manipulation, it would inhibit.
It would feel bad.
Their ability to manipulate.
Right.
That's the paradox, is they've overcome the thing itself.
Yeah.
So now they're just fully engaged in being with you.
Right.
And you realize this is how you are with every person. And you realize everyone walks away from you with the feeling that I've just met my new best friend.
Uh-huh.
And it's just not the case.
Right.
Because not everyone can be your best friend. But because of that effect, you end up getting stuff because people want to give you things because they think of you as their best friend. So that's what a super intelligent, socially a social genius is like.
I'm gonna say that,
from my apprehension.
And AI is going to be like that.
Times a trillion.
Right.
You know, so
it's going to be endlessly charismatic
and endlessly imitative and mm-hmm. endlessly able to mirror you, and
right.
not just to mirror you in the way that like an expert at sales mirrors a person, but they will mirror you based on very specific biometric patterns emerging from your eye dilation, your exhalation, the pheromones you're secreting.
I know what you're talking about right now.
What?
I know what you're talking about.
They're going to.
You're talking about a fuckbot.
Oh, that's that's
essentially, in some sense, that's what it is.
It's not just a fuckbot. I mean, it's the manifestation of anything that you want
right.
at that moment, and it will. So the idea of these things, you know, that they're the way they're going to take it, the way that they're going to destroy us.
It's not with guns.
It's not good. It's through breaking our hearts.
Right. Well, because they're the next level. Because we created them, so they have a human soul essentially. Because humans to some extent are they guided the creation of these things. So it's just us. It's just a new version of people in a way. It's just this new thing. It's just not. It's not a biological life form. It's the only difference.
Well, you could say okay. So
I don't think it's not life. That's what gets me is when people act like life has to be biological. It has to be carbon based. Which is so, selfish to think about only something that's like your experience of the world can be significant and meaningful.
Okay, right. So you're an early, early human and you know there's this thing called the wind.
Ooh.
Right? You know, there's wind. It blows against you.
Boom.
But how do you know there's wind? You know there's wind not because you can see the wind. You know that there's wind because of the particulates carried in the wind.
Right, you see it.
You know
you
there's
feel
wind.
It.
You can see the drifting of the trees as it moves through them.
Right.
You feel it against your skin. But you can never really see the wind, right? Mm-hmm. The same way you can never see gravity. Like, we know there's gravity, but we can witness gravity only through its effects, right? It's very – no one's ever going to see what
gravity is. Death is the effect of gravity.
You're not going to witness gravity or just, you know, the thing that's holding us to these chairs right now. So there is this thing we know. It's called gravity, right? And the same is true for time.
Mm-hmm.
You're never going to see the passage of time outside of the way that certain particulates move. So,
right.
In the same way, here we have this concept of the evolutionary tendency. You could say that technology is to the evolutionary tendency what a sail is to wind. And so, what you've done here is you've taken,
just tethered it.
You've tethered it. I say sometimes that it's like throwing paint on the invisible man. But the paint in this case is a super advanced, processor a modular processing system that is so advanced that it's able to actually become a container within which
it can map the simulation that we're currently living in right now.
Yes.
Because that's what we are living in this simulation right now. It's pretty cool to fucking think about that.
There is a lot to be said for that.
It's got
to
be. Because after reading more about that experiment with the helium atoms where they showed that expectations can influence outcome regardless of time. Like after, I thought about that so much, like for weeks and
now
weeks.
Now that has been, I've had that explained to me by some wonderful skeptics.
You did?
Yeah.
And okay. I want to hear this.
So it's not so much that. The idea is that when you're dealing with things at the quantum level,
mm-hmm.
the tool of measurement must affect the thing being measured. So if I take, if I'm measuring, I mean, I'm going to ruin this.
It's
for
so hard to explain. It's really
difficult. I
don't
think it's that hard to explain.
I feel like I can't put it into words.
So it's
like,
okay, here, let's imagine that there is on the floor right now, 6 million bouncy balls, right?
Right.
And the way that I'm trying to measure these bouncy balls, no, that's not the right way. It's almost like, okay, or imagine if it's like, there's like, you're measuring, it's like you're measuring something so small, like powder, right?
Right.
Your breath or any kind of fluctuation
can influence it.
Is going to influence it. So I think it's more, that's more what there's, I think we, when we hear that, we want to, and I certainly went into a deep hippie, new age, secret level manifestation idea of like, see, there it is. Our thoughts are shaping the result. But it seems more that it's somehow the tool of measurement is the thing that's impacting the result.
So they're saying they're calling bullshit on it, basically?
They're not calling bullshit. It's just something that like people who aren't scientists don't understand because it's
a different language.
Science. It's a different language. You got to go to, it's a kind of thing where maybe you need to go to a university to, because the idea is it's like, okay, if the hope here is if I will a thing into being, it will therefore come into being through the powers of my mind, minus me externally shifting phenomena. And that's the dream of magic. And I think that is true, except that the shift that you're creating in the matter of the universe with your mind is the shift in the frequency of your body, which then
you change, not the thing you're thinking changes.
And from your change, the universe around you will conform to that change, and you can get very specific about the changes that you want to make.
But you could make the case that, you know, where do you draw the, there's no line, because one thing changes, the other thing changes. It's all about your viewpoint to what thing is actually changing. And basically, you can't really have a viewpoint without being subjective. And then once you're subjective like that, that's...
Well, what can you change? That's the big question.
Right.
So when I was a kid, not even a kid, I mean, I think in my 20s, I probably tried this. Even now, from time to time, I will sit and think, can I move that straw with my mind?
Right.
And I'll stare at the straw and I'll try to move it with my mind, and I've never been able to. Now, a lot of people, what they will do is they will spend their entire lives doing variations of the experiment of trying to move a straw with their mind. And they'll fail at that experiment over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. And the reason they want to move the straw with their minds is because no one's ever been able to do that.
Right.
For some reason, they skip what you can change, which is you can.
Right.
You can.
That's such a joke.
Start working out. Start exercising. Start eating right. Start reading good information. Start altering your behavior patterns.
Because you can't. They're easy to change.
Start there.
Right.
And then when you start there, who knows? Perhaps after you've mastered your body, mastered your thoughts, mastered your ability to focus, mastered your ability to do whatever art or craft or work that you're engaged in.
Then you can move up to that high technology.
Maybe. Maybe.
Maybe not.
Maybe not.
Maybe it's just, maybe it's just the human technology is not there yet. Because I look at meditation as technology. I realize that's what it is. Meditation is just...
Absolutely.
It's just technology. I'm a computer. Sometimes I got to reboot. When you reboot, the computer works better.
Yeah.
And it's all it is. It's just a type of technology that I get to use.
Damn right.
And maybe there's some technology that will happen eventually that maybe is some sort of a hybrid, like a silicon-carbon hybrid that allows you to... because if we look at space right now, like there's air between all the things around us, but... This whole area is filled. There's no emptiness at all. This whole area is filled with stuff. We can just, the way our cameras and our particular body set works is we can see through this matter than the air because of the way our lenses are tuned, you know?
That's right.
There's all this. We're covered in shit.
There's no
billions
such
and billions of.
There's
no vacuum.
There ain't no nothing.
Right.
And now the idea is, so prior to the invention of the combustion engine, there was always the potential for there to be a combustion engine. So for 13.6 billion years, or 13.6, almost 13.6 billion years, up until the point of the invention of the combustion engine, existing within the some completely undiscovered aspect of the universe, mm-hmm. there was encoded within the universe the potential for there to be a combustion engine.
Right.
And in the same way, there was encoded into the potential of the universe, or into the fabric of the universe, the potential for there to be a Johnny Pemberton, and the potential for there to be a Duncan Trussell.
Everything.
Everything. So in that same way, there is theoretically within every single quantum pixel of reality, the potential encoded within that for there to be anything that could be. Some things have not come into being mm-hmm. yet, at least in this sector of the universe.
This bandwidth, yeah.
This bandwidth, they haven't come into being yet. They haven't grown out of the soil of right. potentiality yet, but they can grow. So in that way, that means that within anything that you could think of, you know, the ability to move a straw with your mind, for example.
It will grow.
And it's interesting, like, you know, just you could do little thought experiments with yourself. Mm-hmm. You could think, okay, if somebody said to me, here's unlimited resources, can you figure out a way to create telekinesis mm-hmm. with a human mind? You would probably figure out a way to do it. You would at least come up with a theory. You like right. right off the top of my head, I would say, okay, well, maybe if I had some kind of neural prosthesis
right.
that somehow was able to create vacuum,
a quantum field or some
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, some kind of magnetic field, but it's got to deal with plastic. So it's like, well, I know that if I push the straw with my finger, it's going to move. And I know if I blow the straw, it's going to move. So if there's all this air floating around, air currents,
you move that air.
But if I could change the heat
yeah.
To create some kind of wind around the straw, then maybe there could be a little shift, which right. means I need some kind of like way to like generate heat with my eyes.
A brain laser.
You need a brain laser.
Once we get these brain lasers working, man.
So, you know, it yeah. is, the potential is there. It's just, we haven't gotten to the point yet, but this gets in, and I'm sure I said this before, this is one of my favorite stories about this guy. Terrence McKenna tells a story in relation to psychedelics. The great argument being you can get to the place that you get to, you can get to the psychedelic mindset through meditation, right?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it happens to me twice a day sometimes.
So McKenna, being a huge psychedelic right. advocate and somebody who has seemed to be quite skeptical when it came to the meditative path.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, a little bit, man. Like,
okay. I don't know.
For someone who was completely comfortable talking about self-transforming machine elves in the DMT realm
right.
and witnessing vast machines floating in the orbits of alien planets that he would envision through the
those heroic doses. Yeah. yeah.
He was actually had a little bit of a skeptical streak in him.
Really? What did he say?
He said that when it comes to meditation, the story that he tells, and many people tell this story, not just McKenna.
Okay.
He said there's a man who was studying with a meditation teacher.
Right.
And he went off into the woods. He had a guru, and he went off into the woods to try to develop cities. That's the fancy word for special powers that you can develop okay. through a practice. And not all of them are fabulous. I mean, it's like when you look at an incredible guitarist,
right.
you're looking at a city. You're looking at a developed tactic.
Something.
An incredible
thing. Warrior.
It's magical. So this guy goes off in the woods. And for 20 years, he meditates until he finally gains the ability to walk on water.
Uh-huh.
And he comes back to his master and he says, "Master, for 20 years I meditated and behold..." And he walks on water in front of his master. And the master's like, "All right, the nickel or the ferry costs a nickel." So the whole point is like, you right. spent fucking 20 years doing something you could do for nothing.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I remember hearing this quote like a long time ago and thinking about that. Yeah, because psychedelics are the nickel. It's the psychedelics are the ferry.
Right. Yeah, that's what McKenna said. Now, That being said, as someone who's gone into a float tank multiple times since I got one, completely stone cold sober, and experienced some of the most profound psychedelic crazy experiences of my life, minus any input from, and in fact, in that fucking tank, I've noticed that at least cannabis seems to, for me,
inhibit it
or get in the way of the thing.
It clouds the water a bit.
So from that POV, it's like, well, I don't know, man. I mean, we're looking at, it's like which place you want to tune into, guess, really.
It's tough. Yeah. I mean, because it's got to be all the same thing, I think, in some sense, or where you're, whatever you're tapping into, like the idea of going, in TM, they talk about going deep, like you're transcending into the depth of some area that's like, it's both here and there. It's it's a dual world. So you're aware, but you're also in this place of, you're basically in a dream state and all these things happen to you and you feel like, I mean, I've had the most intense psychedelic things I've ever had happen were through meditation. Cause stuff where like something is talking to me and I don't know what's coming. I'm not hearing it. I'm not able to manipulate it. This is a face I've never seen before and it's speaking to me. There's a sound I've never heard before.
Yeah.
There's things that I can't describe. It's impossible for words to describe because language is such a rudimentary way to describe things that have happened just in like the sober state of meditation.
It's like a monkey going into an air traffic control tower. It's like, trying to describe it to the other monkies.
That's a great description.
He's only going to be able to describe it based on bananas.
And shit and fucking logs.
And fleas. Yeah. And like, how do you, how do you do it?
Yeah.
Because when you get to, when you're invited into that place.
Oh, it's nuts.
It's nuts. And it's familiar. And that's the other aspect of it. Right. There's a familiarity. In that fucking, you know, I talked about this on the podcast or at least this week, but I went to that tank.
Right.
Float tank for about 2 hours. I'm laying there and it must be just all of a sudden there's a sense of this presence in there with me. There's something in there with me. It's not a dark presence. It's bad. They very good vibes.
Right.
But it's like in the way that like mushrooms can talk to you, or it's not a voice, but it's a compulsion or a kind of deep, quiet
a sense
it's saying your heart chakra, it's like in my chest, it's pointing out an energy blockage in my chest. It's saying, well, see you're blocked there.
Oh.
And then it's saying, well, just breathe into that, like watch what happens when you breathe into it. Now what's interesting about this moment, completely sober, experiencing this, I can feel the mood of this thing communicating with me, this disembodied, whatever it may be, even though it could just be some deeper part of myself, higher self, you call whatever you want. I don't care.
Right.
But in this moment, it's a thing.
It's grandpa.
It's grand. call it Grandpa Dave.
Grandpa Dave.
But it told me its name weirdly.
Oh, okay.
So, but you could feel its mood.
Uh-huh.
And the mood is the mood of a thing that is really excited and kind of happy to get a chance to have this little chat with you. And it's like, just breathe. Watch what happens when you just breathe into that place.
Right.
So I start breathing into that spot. And as I'm breathing in, it feels like my body is suddenly being stretched. Like my entire body in that tank is now like just going.
Yeah.
And that was too much. And then I sat up in the tank and was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
What the fuck? And got out of the tank and we went and bothered Cora. Like, there was an angel in the tank. And it was crazy.
Yeah.
But that's no psychedelics.
Right. It's completely sober. Yeah.
Yeah. So what, who knows what that is or why it is or how it happens or what it is. You can come up with any system of language that you want to describe it, from Freudian psychology to the mental illness to new age metaphysical stuff to, whatever it is you want it to, Satanism to demon encounters to, there's a million ways you can describe it, but all you can do for your own self is acknowledge that it happened and then see if you can reproduce the experiment.
Yeah. And just remember it. That's the thing sometimes I find that actually works, is I think about if I've had an experience like that, or I'm in a moment, I'm feeling enlightened, like for whatever reason, sometimes I'll look at a big ficus tree, right? And when the wind blows through a ficus, this weird stuff happens where it's like you look at it and it's so chaotic. It's hard to even look at it because it's moving in all these different ways at the same time. And I think something happened like one time I was looking at this ficus tree, this big ficus tree in the wind. And it was so chaotic. I was like, there's something so complicated about what I'm looking at that it basically was like, oh, this is math. This is the universe. Is this
right.
incredibly complicated thing that's no one's looking at but me at that time. It's just this random event that's of infinite complexity. And it's like this quick moment of enlightenment, of transcendence. Sometimes I'm able to, like if I'm freaking out about something or if I'm just I'm over-attending my emotions and feeling negative, if you really sit in those moments when you feel that transcendence, you really sit in it and be like, okay, what does this feel like? Look around you and be like, okay, this is how I feel right now. These are the little anchor points to this feeling. If you can remember those anchor points sometimes to those transcendent moments, you can kind of recall them or sort of like conjure them up again.
That's right.
If you need to kind of get a little hit, a little spike.
That's
because
right.
It's this thing where, yeah, sometimes you get that abyss staring back and it's hard to pull out of the dive.
Yes. I love the abyss though. And you learn to love the abyss. The abyss is so alive. That's actually, I read about this wonderful, term, for the abyss.
What is it?
Superluminous gloom.
Superluminous gloom.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Superluminous gloom. This is in Huxley's The Perennial Philosophy, which is a great book. Okay. Check it out. You'll love it. But it's like, yeah, because in the tank, you get to stare into the darkness.
Right.
And you get
That's
to,
okay.
You see that the darkness is filled with life and you begin to see right. that what we call darkness is just pure potentiality.
Right.
And so you're witnessing this vibrant, energetic, beautiful field of life, what you really are, in fact. And it's alive. And then when you begin to realize like, oh my God, the precursor to all things is itself a million times more vibrant than the thing that grows upon it or is projected upon it.
Right.
The screen is alive. It's like when you begin to realize the screen itself is the uh-huh. flesh of God. And then you start seeing that and then you can experiment with your interaction with that.
Right.
It's kind of this juicy, obsidian, deep, beautiful blackness that mm-hmm. is somehow the most relieving, narcotic, sweet balm that you could ever imagine because your poor neural processing units called your eyes and ears and mouth are always having, maybe not so much your mouth, but your eyes and your ears and the parts of your brain that are responsible for balancing. Once you take the burden off those poor babies.
Yeah, they can relax. And you can tap into the thing that they're on guard against.
Yeah, and you haven't been able to experience that level of a neurological vacation since you've been floating in the womb.
Right. Yeah, neurological vacation, that makes sense. Because that's the thing that they talk about with TM as well, is that how you'll encounter things that are disturbing or really hard to think about or just dark. But it's okay because it's like you're on a train, you're just passing through and you're observing them.
Love it.
And they're just... It's okay because you're in this safe zone. It's like being in a haunted house. It's scary, but you're not going to die because it's just a haunted house.
Weather patterns, baby.
Yeah.
You're just looking at clouds, and some of those clouds look a lot like you being an asshole to your mom when you were 14. You didn't have to be. Or a lot of those clouds just are very poignant memories. Or a lot of those clouds are just kind of strange vivid memories of the cafeteria that you used to eat in the third grade, or like all these strange.
The memory stuff is that to me is the most bizarre aspect of meditation. Is that like where the fuck does that come? These things just shoot in out of nowhere, and you're right there all of a sudden. And there's things I haven't thought about, and maybe we'll never think about ever again. But that to me is that, I don't quite understand.
You can't sweep it under the rug.
Yeah.
That's what I've learned. You can't sweep it under the rug. And if you think you have, you haven't.
No. Nope.
Because I've, like one of the things that came to me in the tank,
things that came to me in the tank.
It was like, actually, there's a great book by John Lilly, one of the architects of the creator of the float tank called Tanks for the Memories.
Oh my God, but, it's such a great pun for something so serious.
Yeah. Wait, but one of the things that came to me in there was I'm laying in the damn thing. And you learn to use the tank. You learn to use that technology.
Yeah, you become accustomed to it.
But as you're learning to use it, one of the things you're going to deal with is a lot of memories that come in. And one of those memories was Daytona Beach, Florida. Mm-hmm. I think I'm 13, 14. We were staying there for the summer. I'm actually still mortified by this, but maybe by confessing to you, there'll be some redemption that right. comes from it. 14 or 15. And we're driving away. We go visit my dad there in the summer. We're driving away. Maybe I was 13. I was probably 13. It might have been 13.
So driving
maybe
back
actually,
to
it's actually maybe a little younger than that. I somewhere between 12 and 14. We're driving away.
Driving back up north.
Driving back home.
Right.
Going, I don't know. Yeah, we're going back home. So this came to me in the tank. This girl, I guess, who had lived in the apartment subdivision or was like around there, came up to the car.
With your dad in the same apartment subdivision?
Yes. I'm sitting with my brother. She came up to the car and she said to me something nice, like, I have a crush on you, or I think you're cute. And I said to her something like, get out of here, fatty. The meanest, cruelest, shittiest thing you could say to try to impress my brother.
Yeah.
Because I wanted him to think I was tough or who knows why I did.
Something.
I was being a little shit bully. Fucking.
He's older.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But it was so wrong.
Yeah, it's bad.
So bad. So cruel, so bad. It's the kind of thing that sticks in a person for the rest of their lives, yeah. maybe. Not to overemphasize my impact on another human being, but that's the kind of thing that's, you know, if a person gets enough of those reactions from expressing love, it might darken them a little yeah. bit into the world. Now, there was no precursor malice to the event. It wasn't like I was like, I'm going to be mean.
Yeah.
I just chose in that moment to be as cruel as I possibly could. So I'm laying in the tank. This is a thing completely swept under the rug. Uh-huh. And that's one of the first things that comes back to me with the most vivid clarity.
You're
as
right
though
there.
I was sitting right there mm-hmm. and in the tank, I'm laying there and the sweetest remorse, you know, this like, it's, right. I call it sweet because it's so alive. This like rush of like, oh fuck, in this sense of like wanting to cry in the tank.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh God, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. That's what it does for you, man. And I think that those moments of processing that and coming to terms with it and what repentance is what they call it. Just
puts
like
it to the fucking grinder.
Yeah.
Grinds it down to make it something where it makes it like, I'm not palatable, but it creates this thing where it takes it outside of the moment. It takes it in a place that's safe and it makes it, it grinds it down. It's like when they take off a bunch of weapons and they take them out a couple miles out and they burn them all in this big
yes.
fucking pit.
Yeah.
They burn that shit off. It's safe out there. No one's gonna get hurt. But it exhausts the energy. It dissipates the energy of that event
yeah.
that's never been dissipated.
You gotta pay the price, man.
And this is why Scientology is making a comeback.
Yeah. Well, you know, I do think, though, that it's like you've got like, they say that when you die, as you're dying.
Right.
I just actually, I did a great podcast with Dr. Drew, and he was talking about the temporal distortion that happens in moments when you're about to die.
Right.
And he was talking about how when he was rock climbing when he was a kid, and he almost fell backwards off a cliff.
Right.
And he fell. And he had like 2 seconds to push off to grab the ledge or he would have died.
Right.
And how in that moment, time stops and it's as though your entire life becomes like a tiny pinhole.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is this in the circumference of that moment. All of everything you've done,
right.
everything you've thought, everything you've said at that moment, it's just this tiny little dot that you're gazing at from the POV of everythingness.
Right.
And they say that when you die, as you're dying, that what's called the life review happens
mm-hmm.
where you go through everyone you've hurt,
yeah.
everyone you've disappointed, everyone you've loved, everyone you've helped, everything that you've done. You have like a Scrooge moment.
Yeah, have a little Christmas Carol thing.
Yeah. And I think that in Buddhism, they say if you can't deal with that now while you're healthy and your body's not
right.
sick, how the fuck do you think you're going to deal with it in the terrifying last few moments of your final exhalations? Yeah. So now's the time to work on that shit, you know?
So the last few seconds will just be this massive mounting orgasm where yes. you'll just be like, wait, he won't stop coming.
Yeah.
We can't. He'll flood a hospital with jizz.
You get this beautiful,
And then it's just like glowing gelatin just flows out of all your pores and soaks the
jizz, baby. Pearl Jam.
Oh, hell, Pearl. That's what Pearl Jam means, isn't it?
I'm gonna guess.
I think it does. The fucking bastards.
Well. I would like to very quickly say that I am. Guys, I just want to. Can I plug something real quick?
Sure.
Guys, a lot of.
Do you want me to plug it for you?
No, I would rather plug it because I don't know if you'll both do a good job. A lot of.
Yeah,
I got to say this just right. now, a lot of people out there are having really bad drug experiences because they're not getting high quality drugs.
Okay.
I just want to let everyone know I'm offering a service where I will test your drugs.
Oh, this is great. Yeah, I know about this. Yeah.
I can't test. Under 8-ball levels of stuff, so I will need a high quantity.
Yeah, because if you test it a small amount, it might be inconsistent.
That's exactly right.
You have
right.
to have a larger amount to draw from, a large sample source, it's called.
So yeah, please check out my website. I will test your drugs for free.
Mm-hmm.
org. Stupid joke. I don't know. I'm working on a dumb joke. Guy, the announcement is we're going on fucking tour.
Quack, quack, quack.
Australia! The word! The word! Audio.
As a branch of the United States government, it is the mission of the National Security Agency to assess and flag citizens of the country who may present a threat to its security. The NSA has clearance to wiretap by any means necessary.
Tapped. Incidental recordings of private conversations from the files of the NSA.
Now on feralaudio.com.